You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode number 160 of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion, Seattle Seahawks.
First of all, how dare you? No, I'm just joking.
Did I just say, I was worried I screwed something up.
saying this will not be as contentious, probably, as last week's podcast was.
I'm sorry, will not. It feels like the response was mixed.
Mixed?
I mean, you got the benefit of the listener agrees with Tristan is a new screen name.
This felt like a lot more people agreed with me than agreed with you.
I don't know if I go that far. But speaking of champions, inappropriate this week.
Were we speaking of champions?
Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
Okay.
Our beer this week is the Trophy Life IPA from our friends at Silver City.
Oh, good
Brewery
friends.
In Silverdale. All it says on here is, life is hard. You deserve an award.
Well, I was thinking to myself, it's weird that being a brewery from the greater Seattle area, that you would have a Trophy Life IPA, because not a thing we're that familiar with, but we had to celebrate this last week with defending champion Seattle Storm opening up the 2019 season.
Yes.
And doing a championship celebration at the game?
Of course. Even though it was not at the place where they played their games, as they won the championship. A toast to the Storm, first off. They were doing it at Angel of the Winds Arena in Everett, where they will be playing some of their games this season, along with Heck Ed. And before the season opener against the Phoenix Mercury, who they took down in the semifinals of last year's WNBA playoffs 3-2 in thrilling fashion, the ring presentation with all the players on the team on hand, which is nice because of the fact that the only player who's not back from last season's team is Noel Quinn, who's now an assistant coach for the Storm. And then they raised the banner to the rafters of the arena they had never played a regular season game in, which was kind of funny. It was very strange, but it was
Macklemore's busy taking up space in Key Arena. He has all the banners now.
That banner came down. There's nothing in there anymore.
Where do you think that banner is?
Is it Mohai? I don't know.
I bet that got gifted back to Macklemore. Imagine if you walked into your house and you go into your guest bedroom and there's a Macklemore banner there.
I mean, it'd make more sense if it was Macklemore's house. Somewhat less sense. This is interesting. So apparently this is actually their fall seasonal. I'm learning this from the Silver City website, which is very appropriate for May 28th.
How long do you think this has been on the shelves?
That's a good question. I picked this up at Total Wine earlier.
It actually tasted pretty good, I have to say.
Crisp and snappy as a fall morning when the camp stove flickers to life at your tailgate.
There we go.
And as easygoing as a game day beer should be, Trophy Life IPA is your reward at the end of a long week of doing. Doing what exactly? Doesn't matter. Life is hard, and you deserve an award just for showing up. Trophy Life IPA incorporates a delicate, restrained malt profile, enhanced by bright citrus hop aromatics, and finishes clean with subtle fruit esters emanating from our house yeast strain. Did you catch the esters?
Esters.
Made with Eldorado hops and YET hops? I'm not familiar with those ones.
You know what I say, though, when I'm drinking a fall seasonal in May? It's fall somewhere.
I guess that makes sense. Sort of. Down under, our friends down under. We also have to toast a team that's pursuing a trophy, another trophy. That is the University of Washington softball team, which advanced to the Women's College World Series for a third consecutive year and the 14th total appearance in program history, including 7 under current coach Heather Tarr, by sweeping Kentucky last weekend in the Super Regionals. Plenty more of discussion of that to come.
All right. I had one last toast that I wanted to sneak in.
Okay. Not as many as last week.
And that was to 20 years of Honey Hole Sandwiches on Capitol Hill. They're celebrating their 20th anniversary this week. No small feat.
That is a very impressive feat. We've also got an anniversary. I don't know if you just want to get into our search for Seattle's best sandwich right here.
Of course I do.
Which has included Honey Hole. Celebrating their 10th anniversary this year. This week, we're reviewing Marination.
10th anniversary.
Yeah.
Starting as a truck?
Started as a food truck in 2009.
Okay.
The first brick-and-mortar location, Marination Station, in Capitol Hill, opened in 2011. Then they subsequently, the following year, opened Marination Mackay on Elkai, and then the third location in South Lake Union in late 2015, which you're not acknowledging.
It's bad location.
Yeah, it's not great. But let me tell you.
It almost, that's the thing. Oh, if I were to talk to restaurants, if I were to advise restaurants, I would say that your reputation is only as good as your worst restaurant.
That's what you're telling the other coast?
I mean, it's a huge deal, right? Because it can taint, like my perception of Marination was tainted for a period of time because the Marination that was closest to me was the SLU location. Right?
I mean, I don't think the food there is bad. It's just the experience is bad.
The whole thing, like, though, Union. I think the food is worse. The experience is bad. It's a bad location. However,
I mean, the one time I went there, they were out of like half the things I wanted to order.
Amazon had already gone through and ordered all the things.
I mean, it was late on a Friday night. I don't know if I can blame Amazon at that point.
You can always blame Amazon.
Well, that's an excellent point.
If we're talking about an experience, though, I mean, the food truck, I remember, I guess it was 2009, like first having Marination and just realizing how excellent it was, just food on its own.
I feel like I was an early adopter of Marination. I don't know how, I mean, if you think you were also in 2009, but the food truck used to come park in Inner Bay right near the Seattle Storm offices. And we would, a couple of us would walk over there at lunch. And I remember really being amazed by the concept of the spam slider at first. I think it was the first time I had eaten spam as an adult was at Marination.
Really? I still have never had spam.
I don't know. You're missing out. Spam is delicious.
I've been going to Marination now for 10 years. And I've basically only ever had two items.
So the Aloha sliders and then the tacos?
And typically I'll do two Aloha sliders, two Colby beef tacos.
Okay.
It's the perfect order. Sometimes I'll take kind of the
pickled. It's a fine order. I wouldn't say it's a perfect order.
The order is so good that I haven't felt the need to mix it up in the last 10 years. At no point did I say to myself, you know what? I'm curious about everything else.
I got curious about a lot of other stuff.
I mean, that's good for you.
I'm Marination menu positive.
But sometimes I'll take the sort of pickled jalapenos from the tacos and put them directly onto the sliders. And the winner of the whole thing, the sauce is great. The Hawaiian bun, the pork, the like kind of like pulled pork that's on there. And you can sort of see the bits where it's pulled off still. Everything about it is just a great experience.
One thing I've tried to replicate, I never really got there, was doing my own version of the spam sliders at home.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How's that worked out for you?
Not great, but because of the Hawaiian bun, it's such a good base.
I'll tell you, you can actually purchase those.
I know, that's what I had. I mean, that wasn't the problem. It was properly cooking the egg that was the trick for me.
And well,
someone who does not cook eggs very frequently.
The sauce that they call the Nanya sauce.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have any of that.
Just the whole thing really is brought together very nicely. And going to the Makai location, I'd never been there either. And if we want to talk about experiences, as bad as the experience in SLU is just how equally good the experience at Marination Makai is.
I mean, we were talking about the Salties that's next door.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the number of people are there and they're paying for that view mm-hmm. in the cost of their meal. You're getting the same view at Marination just sitting out there on their patio. And you are not paying nearly the same kind of exorbitant prices.
It's almost like you forget just how good the view from West Seattle is when you're not there.
Yeah.
Like I was in, which I want to talk to you about this in one second. I was in Gig Harbor yesterday and I was like this is such a great view, all these different things, right? I'm looking at the harbor and shit like that, but then I get to West Seattle and I'm like, you know what, oh, or Gig Harbor, you're complete bullshit compared to West Seattle.
Harsh words for Gig Harbor.
Harbor is great, but I'm just saying, we're talking about, you're looking at the entirety of downtown Seattle from West Seattle. The sun is shining. This is only when the sun is shining.
Yeah, that means very limited part of the year. We happen to go there during that part, thankfully.
It is, you can just see so much, right? Water, mountains. I'm telling you, it really reinvigorated. I was saying to you that I felt like a I don't know what the term is. I felt small-minded for only having ever really lived in the city of Seattle and then saying that Seattle is the best place in the world to live without ever actually living anywhere else. And then I saw that view in West Seattle, and I was like, you know what? Fuck everywhere else. I'm right.
Your priors were confirmed, in other words. Okay, so you ordered...
I went with three sliders and one taco this time.
So I went with one Aloha pork slider.
Okay.
One Spam slider.
There we go.
And then also something that they only, I believe, only have on the menu at the Makai location in Alki, because their menus are slightly different, very depending on the location, although obviously the sliders are consistent everywhere. The pork katsu sandwich, which is much larger than the sliders, but also delicious in its own right.
So the pork katsu sandwich, what is that? It comes kind of like disassembled.
Yeah, it was the first time that it had come like that, and you'll be able to see this in the photo of the meal that we post on Instagram. But they had it like each of the buns on a separately, and so the pork on one side, and I think underneath that some sauce. It's more of a barbecue sauce than the nunya sauce on that one.
Interesting.
And then on the other side, cabbage as well as more sauce,
and sort of like in their slaw.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you get that again? Have you gotten this before?
Oh, I've gotten that many times.
Okay,
yeah.
I mean, so the only thing you definitely would get it again.
The only thing I dislike about it is that it makes it hard to get a variety of other things. Mm-hmm. Like, ideally, if I had someone to split that with and just do half of that size.
I think I would have gone halvesies if you would have proposed it.
I thought that was kind of implied, but I guess it wasn't. I should have articulated it better.
Well, you know, the one thing that we are not good at is communicating.
It's true. We don't talk very much. We just sat there in silence for the entire meal. It was awkward. Listening to other people talking about embracing the Arkansas, so you know that was the upside.
It must be mentioned, though, that you had a pretty incredible sneak while we were there, too, because we arrived sort of late. It was like after 7 o'clock when they closed at 8, and there was a line well out the door, probably like 40 people deep.
So this was on Memorial Day. It was a nice day. Everyone was at Alki. Like, it was totally predictable that there was going to be this kind of line. But if you go to the bar, you can order food at the indoor bar. As long as you order drinks. You have to order drinks to be able to order food there. And that line is typically much shorter. And then, you know, you can enjoy your food on the patio.
It was excellent. I mean, we literally walked right up. Maybe there was one person in front of us.
I mean, we got a little lucky in terms of the timing. But yeah, there were probably at least 12 groups of people in line to order from the actual, like, kitchen line. And
12? We probably bypassed 40 people.
I don't know if it's that many, but... I'd say a solid couple dozen.
You're selling the sneak short.
It was a good sneak.
This was an incredible sneak. It was one of the better sneaks I've ever seen executed.
I've been to this location. Like, I go there at least once, maybe twice on a year. This was not my first time.
And it's usually you're saying not this is not a repeatable skills sneak?
I mean, it's the better way to go. You should do that if you're going to hang out. But I don't think it's usually going to be that dramatic an advantage.
It's worth it even if you're not going to hang out, though, if you're in a hurry and you could go there, order a drink, drink it while your food is coming, and then leave.
It's possible, yeah.
Because you're saving yourself like 20, 30 minutes that way.
Yeah.
Okay, so what about the food itself?
I mean, it's great. I mean, I think that if I were to do my power rankings, I would probably go Aloha pork slider, number one. Mm-hmm. Spam slider, number two.
Okay.
Pork katsu sandwich, number three.
Okay.
And you'll notice that the tacos do not enter my list, which is...
Did you get a taco?
I did not. I generally don't. The only time I would get tacos... I used to in way back in the day. When the truck was in Ballard, they used to make some tacos that included Theo chocolate.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was quite good. But
you are pretty old school when it comes to a marination.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a decade of me in marination.
I don't remember that at all.
It's been a phenomenal decade. Well, if you didn't go to the Ballard place, I think that's the only time they did it. Only right Ballard. It was right by the Theo location there.
Okay.
That's the right chocolate, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you were going to the one that's in, like, downtown Ballard?
No, they don't have...
Theo's in Fremont.
Yeah, okay. That checks out.
Yeah.
I just know it was north of... We had to cross the bridge.
I mean, it's not that far between...
Yes. Freelard?
Yes.
Yeah, Freelard probably. It used to park there. After it stopped parking in Inner Bay, that's where we would go to get our fix. But generally, my order does not include tacos.
How would they incorporate Theo chocolate into the taco?
I mean, it was like... It's a sauce, basically.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
This was 10 years ago. I don't remember it that well. But generally, my order strictly consists of, again, the sliders and perhaps the katsu sandwich, or they have a torta at the marination station location in Capitol Hill, and I will get that as well from time to time.
I'm just all about those sliders. Well, so if you recall, hardcore Pelton Cast listeners will recall that last year, Marination was also a competitor for Seattle's Best Taco / Burrito.
Right.
And at that time, I said that my favorite thing at Marination is the sliders, so how can they have the best taco?
Exactly.
Right? And I sort of stand by that. I get the tacos, and I like the pickled jalapenos. I think the taco is good, but the sliders are the winner here. And do I think that the sliders are Seattle's best sandwich? Probably not.
No, yeah, probably not.
But they are incredibly good. I think it's almost like it's such an experience having some of the high-level sandwich, including the Maono chicken sandwich, which we'll talk about briefly for a second. The Maono chicken sandwich or a tatsdrami or something like that, right? Like, that is such a singular experience. This is a very good slider that you're having.
I mean, I think it's kind of singular in terms of the combination of everything. I mean, I haven't tried a lot of Spam sliders elsewhere. I'll say that much. Your menu, your order is a little more replicable.
I've had it so many times also.
Yeah.
I mean, that might even be an issue. If this was the first time that I'd ever had it, I might be even more enamored with it.
I mean, it was probably recency bias, but I was talking to someone who was going to come to Seattle and was asking for advice. And the first place I listed was, you know, since they're coming during the summer, to go to Marination on Elkhai.
Yeah, it's just great. I think it's like a 92.
I gave it a 93. So we're in the same ballpark here.
You know, like, I don't know what I would do better with this, because I think the experience is perfect. At the same time, it's still just not Seattle's best.
I mean, I think
sandwich.
I think it's partially probably the fact that there is other stuff there. Like, it's not a place that specializes in one thing. The whole menu is good, which is good, but also makes it a little harder to, you know, single them out for any individual item.
That feels fair.
You want to talk about chicken sandwiches?
Briefly. So we went on Friday night before, or actually after, going to the Husky softball game, which we'll discuss later, and went to the Rachel / Maono in New Village. And I got the hot chicken sandwich from Maono, which I thought I'd gotten in the past.
So their spice levels are, do they have a naked?
Naked, mild, I think medium, hot, and then there's like an extra hot. And so I went with the hot, and I was just like, you know what? I must have had the mild last time, maybe the medium. I think I had the medium, and it was fine. Like, didn't really taste any sort of spice whatsoever. I was feeling confident. I'd had, from what I consider to be the hottest chicken sandwich in Seattle, at Sisters and Brothers. And I'd had that, and I had the hot there. And I was mostly fine with that experience. Having the hot at Maono really snuck up on me. in a good way. Like, I want a hot chicken sandwich to be hot. You know what I mean? I don't want to eat, like, I had the hot, and I want to talk about Chick-fil-A in 1 second. I had the spicy chicken sandwich from Chick-fil-A. And it's like, look, me and Chick-fil-A have different definitions of what spicy means. This was a spicy chicken sandwich.
You gotta understand where Chick-fil-A's origins are.
Yeah, sure. I understand. But I'm saying, when people call things spicy, or like, you get the Ezell's, like, spicy, like, spicy strips, I'm like, I literally cannot tell the difference between the spicy and the not spicy.
You can tell a difference. I disagree with that take.
I want spice that you can taste, right? Like, you want to feel the heat. And I was actually very impressed with Maono here, because it wasn't like a whitewashed thing where I'm like, yeah, it's hot, but like, any person can eat it. Like, this is fucking hot. And I felt it. That's the other thing is, you know, Danny Chow, when he talked about eating spicy chicken, he's like, eating spicy chicken, whatever, is a 24-hour experience. And like, I want to go through that 24, you know, I want to be sweating at night, right? I want to be feeling it the next day that I ate a spicy chicken or hot chicken sandwich.
I'm good at that experience. Right?
But I'm just saying, I'm impressed with Maono that their hot chicken sandwich was actually hot.
All
right. Right? Are you not, like, do you not agree?
I mean, kudos to them. It does nothing for me.
You don't have to eat it. That's the thing. Yeah, is they have options. That's, for
it's
you.
It's good to have options.
It's just like, you want to have the hot actually be hot.
Okay.
So I was impressed by that. I feel like the Maono chicken sandwich is a legit competitor.
Yeah. I mean, what about it would not have impressed
I'm
you?
I'm just saying, like, every time I have it, it is just so incredible. Those daikon pickles, like, it is such an amazing experience.
It wasn't quite nice enough. Well, it was definitely not nice enough. We'll probably talk about this.
It was terrible. It was 54 degrees.
We were very much indoors, but still a great experience at the Rachel's and Mahono. Like, top notch.
It's great. I also wanted to say that I've been to Chick-fil-A two times ever.
Two times ever? That's hard to believe.
It's true.
Did you try believe and go there it. On Sundays?
Every time.
You're disappointed.
Oh, no. Are they open on Memorial Day? I feel like Chick-fil-A is not open on Memorial Day.
I can't speak to that.
Well, the thing is, I wanted to go back on Memorial Day. Say what you will about Chick-fil-A, and I felt guilty while I was eating it, but hot damn, that was some good chicken.
They make a great chicken sandwich. It's inarguable.
The first time that I went, I remember it not being that good of an experience, and I was like, who cares about Chick-fil-A? It's kind of an average chicken sandwich. But then I went and I got and it's also pretty cheap too.
Yeah.
I got the spicy chicken sandwich and a 3-piece strips. And all told, it was like, I don't know, $9 or something. They gave me 2 cups of, and just everybody who was working there seemed really happy to be working there, like young There's and an happy to be effect. Working there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God, it's infectious, right? Like, you know that you love going to places where people like appreciate working at the place.
You got to try the breakfast and the spicy biscuit.
Spicy biscuit.
I think that's yeah. I've definitely had that. Yeah, give that a shot.
I'm going to give that a shot.
Okay.
You don't have to worry about whether I'm going to give that a shot or not. I ate the strips like after they were just sitting out for like 3 hours or whatever. They were cold.
No, that sounds unsafe.
God, you think everything's unsafe? I ate a Chipotle burrito when it sat in the hot sun for 5 days.
You're breaking about this?
I was fine.
Congrats.
And they were still excellent.
Okay.
3 hours. I was just like, they were cold.
I don't know if I've ever had their chicken strips. I think I've only done the nuggets there. And the nuggets to me, the breading to chicken ratio is a little too high for me.
You should eat those strips. They were so good. It was like 3 hours later and they were still so moist. Like they were just like dripping. It was excellent.
They make very good chicken.
So we're going to at some point do, when we do a search for Seattle's best sandwich, do a national...
We're still doing the search for Seattle's best sandwich.
What?
We're already doing the search for Seattle's best sandwich.
But as the process goes along.
At some point we'll take a week.
And we're going to do a national sandwich day talking about Jimmy John's, Subway, Jersey Mike's.
I mean, we also still have to do the Chipotle pod. Nate Duncan still knows it's that Chipotle pod.
Duncan! I want to throw, since we're doing chicken sandwiches in there, I want to throw Chick-fil-A in that conversation.
Fine by me.
And we're going to rate these places on the same scale that we're rating all of the local places.
And then we're going to rate Top Ramen on that scale. I don't know what the equivalent would be.
Perfect 100.
Tyson chicken nuggets. Should we talk about sports?
All right.
Not that much sports to talk about, but some updates, certainly. We start with the NHL Seattle group, which lost consultant Dave Tippett, who was hired as the new head coach of the Edmonton Oilers on Tuesday. Tippett joined the NHL Seattle group as senior advisor last June, offering feedback on the design of the new arena and training facility, as well as the beginnings of personnel filling out the front office. NHL Seattle group recently interviewed Columbus Blue Jackets assistant GM Bill Zito as a possible GM candidate, but Todd Leiwicki has not yet committed to naming a GM this year. Sounds like there may be more availability of candidates next year if the NHL group, Seattle group, decides to wait on that decision.
Okay.
All right, we move ahead to the Sounders, who suffered a 3-2 loss on Sunday at Sporting Kansas City, just their second of the season. A wild match saw a Johnny Russell hat trick beat the Sounders, who trailed 2-0 and 3-1. Had a chance for a road draw after Kelvin Leerdam goal in the 71st minute. Leerdam having previously set up Raul Ruiz Diaz with the other Sounders score, but they could not come up with the late equalizer. Center back Javier Arriaga made his Sounders debut ahead of schedule days after arriving in Seattle because of the fact that starting center back Kim Keehee left in the first half due to lateral knee pain. Sounders somewhat unlucky in this match based on expected goals to concede 3 times. So pretty similar XG ratings between the two teams. So not really a bad performance, I would say, by the Sounders on the road, despite the loss.
But not... I mean, giving him 3 goals is not exactly the type of situation you want to see for Javier Arriaga's first match. And then also with Chad Marshall retiring, it's like,
I mean,
answers still needed defensively.
I mean, to me, the defense has much more control over the expected goals, and then whether the goals actually go in is somewhat keeper, but mostly just randomness.
Okay.
The Sounders back in action on Saturday, taking on FC Dallas, who comes in 8th in the West in points per match. The Sounders will be without Nicola Ladero in this match due to yellow card accumulation. Brian Schmetzer said the expectation is the team will get midfielder Victor Rodriguez back in the lineup, and Gustav Svensson may also return after he was in the 18 last weekend but was not used as a substitute with the Sounders in need of offense.
Yeah, kind of, I mean, desperate need to get healthy also.
Yeah, and we're starting to come up on players getting called into international duty. There was some thought that Arriaga would be joining the Ecuador national team ahead of this match, but now that he probably will start with Key likely sideline, I'm not sure if that will change anything. So we'll stay tuned on who exactly will be available for the Sounders for this match, and then they have one more ahead of the international break.
What is happening in international play this summer? Anything?
Well, Copa America.
Okay.
The Gold Cup. And then in Europe, it's just qualifying for the Euro.
Okay.
But definitely a lot going on there. So as many Sounders players have been called into their national teams, and hopefully the team can manage their absences. Reign FC made it 2 in a row at home with a 2-1 win over the North Carolina Courage on Memorial Day. Reign have now moved up to 6th in the NWSL standings on 9 points, and they will stay home to host Houston on Sunday in their final match before the start of the Women's World Cup on June 7th. Coming up here. The aforementioned Seattle Storm, we talked about them at the beginning, opened their season with a 77-68 win over the Phoenix Mercury after getting their championship rings. A really impressive performance by a shorthanded Storm team with Sue Bird and Brianna Stewart both on the sidelines. Jordan Canada stepped up in place of Sue Bird, had 6 turnovers in the first half, but then played well down the stretch. Natasha Howard was really great at both ends of the court. Storm's defense, I think, kind of carried them in this one. They took advantage of the fact that the Mercury also had their own injury issues with Diana Taurasi out for the first half of the season. But all in all, I think, an impressive performance and one that made me feel a lot better about their chances of making the playoffs this season.
How much of this was Phoenix being bad without Diana Taurasi? And how much of it was the Storm seeming like they're a good team?
I mean, it's a little tough to say because you only have the one game to judge on for either of them. I mean, Phoenix's spacing is not as good. They lost some other shooters in addition to Taurasi. Leilani Mitchell, who's an Eastern Washington native, they waived right before the start of the season, and they traded a reserve Stephanie Talbot. And so basically they had really 2 scoring threats, just Brittany Griner, who the Storm did a great job of double teaming and even triple teaming at times. And then, Dewana Bonner, who went off for 31 points in this game, but they were the only 2 scorers for Phoenix. Whereas the Storm had really nice balance in this game, even without those 2 injured players. And then also Alicia Clark didn't play just 2 days after winning the championship in France. But the Storm still had 4 starters in double figures. Kalina Mosqueda-Lewis, who filled in for Clark, had 8 points. And they got some solid production off the bench, too.
What was the atmosphere like in the arena?
It was good. I mean,
Where is this arena?
Downtown Everett.
Okay.
It's not at the Angel of the Winds Casino.
Okay.
They're just the sponsor.
Okay.
You've been to this arena.
This is where the Silvertips play.
They had it. They announced a sellout. I would say there were some empty seats in the 200 level in the end zones, but it was a really good crowd and very into it. So we'll see if that continues, when it's not opening day.
Did it feel like, how many games? They're playing 5 games in Everett?
I believe 5, yes.
How much of that crowd felt like they were sort of like the typical Storm crowd?
I would say maybe 70-30. I think particularly for this game, the diehard fans were more likely to make the trip up to Everett. But I think they are also going to draw some local fans from Everett who, don't want to, or Snohomish County, who don't want to make the trip all the way down to, Seattle to come to a game. But if it's right in their backyard, hey, happy to come out and support.
All right. How was driving to Everett?
Oh, so long. Very rainy on the way back.
Most of the games are probably not going to be that bad.
In terms of weather?
Yes.
I would hope so, yes.
The drive may still be that bad. I want you to drink. Okay, so this is unrelated to anything. We'll come back to the Seattle Storm. But if you recall, we played a fantasy football matchup. And in the championship game, you and I played each other. And on the line was you drinking a sour beer.
That is correct.
And we pushed that back for like 3 months before you drank a sour beer.
You pushed that back.
This right here that I have in front of me was the beer that I wanted you to drink.
So is this a Gig Harbor area brewery?
It is.
Seven Seas?
From the fine people at Seven Seas Brewing, we have...
Do we know which are the Seven Seas?
The Seven Seas?
Yeah. No. Okay.
That's... You've got the Michigan? Huron?
Those are oceans.
Ontario? We have the Water Chopper Goza, ale brewed with sea salt and coriander.
Oh, when I think of what I want in my beer, sea salt and coriander.
Should I get you a cup? How are you going to drink this? Do you want to drink it straight from the can?
I mean, if I go first, then that's fine.
Because I, for one, don't care what order I drink drinks from, but you do. Okay, so.
I also care whether my Chipotle has been left out for 5 days or not. So, you know, we all care about different things.
I'm so curious what you think of this, because it's so different than any sour beer you've ever tasted.
That's not pleasant. Oh, that's the aftertaste. The original was like not that bad. Then the aftertaste, that's very, very sour. I don't know why anyone would want to subject themselves to
that's
that.
Salty, right?
Yeah, I need to like drink some water now. Oh, that is a very unpleasant aftertaste. I'm sorry to the fine people at Seven Seas. That's just not what I'm looking for at all.
This is what I was looking for.
We should have done video of that.
Oh, my God.
So back to storm news.
Oh, man. It's so salty.
After we recorded the podcast last week, news came down that the storm was going to place Breanna Stewart on the season-long suspension list. Which removed her from the team's roster and salary cap, notably, but means that she wouldn't get paid her salary this season. So that allowed them to keep rookie Anreal Howard, their second-round draft pick, as a 12th player on the roster. We'll see. They also have some flexibility, potentially, if they do decide they want to pick up a point guard in Sue Bird's absence. That could be a possibility, although you know they are excited about Howard's future. Subsequently, the WNBA announced that Stewart was going to be joining them as in an ambassador role this season that will pay her more than her $65,000 salary would have been in the last year of her rookie contract. So,
what does an ambassador role mean? It means that they're paying Breanna Stewart.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had a chance to speak about this with the WNBA's chief operating officer.
You're flustered after drinking that beer. Okay, so you had a chance to...
I don't know if I'm that flustered about it. You know, at the game on Saturday, Christy Hedgepeth, the chief operating officer, was there to hand out the championship rings because the new WNBA president won't be taking office until, I believe, next month, but early June. And she said they really hadn't defined that role yet. This is something that kind of, you know, came up out of discussions with Breanna Stewart's agent late last week. After
they're paying Breanna Stewart to...
The sense is that the league didn't like the optics of Stewart not getting paid this year. And, you know, the Storm was very clear that it was her choice that she wanted to allow them to have the roster spot, that they didn't necessarily, you know... plan to do that. They could have just kept her on the roster, but you know she didn't want to deprive the team of that roster spot. So it was subsequent to that, I think, that the decision was made by the league.
This was obviously a good thing to do on the league's behalf, right?
Yeah, I mean it's a good step. It's and so the league's
can I zag here though? Right?
What?
Like this shouldn't be the rule as it is. Like why is there no? Yeah.
I think most people agree about that.
Okay, so
I mean the reason that they're
not zagging,
no,
like, but I'm just saying, like, this shouldn't be that. This is like one of those situations where there's like a GoFundMe to pay for medical bills or whatever, and it's like we should just have insurance.
Yes, the league, you know, I mean, the salary cap is very hard in the WNBA because, you know, there are financial issues in the league, but you know, I think the sense is, so there's a new collective, the players opted out of their collective bargaining agreement after this season. We'll have the chance to negotiate a new one. And I think at that point we will see some kind of an injured list so that we don't see this situation again.
Has there been a work stoppage for the WNBA?
No.
Ever?
No. It was close to a work stoppage. It was narrowly averted before the 2003 season, but I mean, quite frankly, if there's a work stoppage, it might mean the end of the WNBA.
Yeah.
So
all parties are encouraged to get a deal done.
Yeah, and I talked to Sue Bird before the game, and she seemed optimistic about, you know, the negotiations and the partnership with the league from that standpoint. Also, Sue shared some more details on her forthcoming surgery on her left knee. So I didn't really understand, I don't think, what was going on until talking to her. So it was described as a loose body being removed from her knee, and that's kind of often what happens with there's like a fragment of bone that will chip off and be lodged in the knee. That's not actually what's the case for her. So she has a growth, I think, in the back of the knee that it has been there for a while, and she's just been able to play with it for a long period of time. And so doctors had told her, you know, and her thought was, if it isn't bothering me, there's no need for do anything right now. Like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. She said that last fall, after she won the championship and then played for the U.S. women's national team in the FIBA World Cup, where they won gold, her knee was bothering her at that point, but she underwent an MRI and that revealed bone bruises on the knee. And so she thought that was the issue. Rest the off season, which is kind of the response for a bone bruise. And then when she started to ramp up, still experiencing the same issues where it's difficult for her to sprint or jump, and went back, got another MRI. They found that the bone bruises had healed. And so the conclusion was that this is what was bothering her now, and that's why it was time for her to get surgery. The other thing we talked last week about, you know, there's been reports about the timetable and the potential for her missing the entire season. And she said basically they don't know the timetable, because part of what's happened is that the joint has expanded around this growth, and it needs to close back up as part of the healing process. And that's going to kind of control when she's able to get back on the court. So.
All of this sounds very uncomfortable.
It's not the best. We don't need to fight over this again.
No, I'm not saying. I'm just saying, like, thinking about it.
Yeah, no, it's unpleasant.
Yeah.
I didn't double check with her on whether it's actually golf ball sized, as people reported last week.
Let it be known that my face is horrified.
We've got a lot of faces. This needs to be the first visual Pelton cast. The Storm this week will head out on the road playing Wednesday at Minnesota, Friday at Atlanta, and Saturday at Chicago. They're only back-to-back of the season coming up on Friday and Saturday before returning home on Tuesday to face the Minnesota Lynx.
All right. So probably we'll know a lot more about the Storm team in a week.
Yeah. I mean, we'll have a four times bigger sample size. So that'll be good.
I mean, but that's a bit of a difficult road trip, just travel-wise.
Logistically, yeah. Yeah, Atlanta to Chicago is a tough back-to-back. It's not a short flight.
Well, and where are they playing? It's Minneapolis to Atlanta to Chicago over 4 days.
Yes.
Like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
So, if the Storm come out of this, if they win two of those games, I think the expectation would be that they actually are a good team.
Yes, I would agree with that. All right, brief update on the Seahawks, where ESPN's Brady Henderson had some reporting on contracts this week. New backup quarterback Geno Smith signed a minimum contract with just $25,000 guaranteed. And then defensive tackle Al Woods, his one-year contract worth up to $2.25 million, has a $400,000 signing bonus, is his only guarantee.
Maybe I don't know that much about backup quarterback deals, but this is kind of a steal for Geno Smith, right?
It 100% feels like it's a steal for Geno Smith.
Like, this is a quarterback who started NFL games semi-competently.
Yeah.
Right?
Adequately.
Like, if Geno Smith was your starting quarterback, you probably are not going to have the worst starting quarterback in the NFL on that Sunday.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And he's getting paid the minimum with basically no guaranteed money. Like, this is a hell of a deal for Geno Smith.
Yeah, I feel really good about it. I mean, I assume he was making somewhat more. I guess he was only making $1 million last year with the Chargers, but $200,000 of that was guaranteed. And previously with the Giants, 1 year, $1.2 million in 2017 with $300,000 guaranteed, according to overthecap.com.
I mean, so I guess it's not like he's made that much money in the past. It's almost like if you've been paid well in the past, you will continue to be paid well despite the on-the-field performance.
Are we talking about Charlie Whitehurst now?
Talking about a lot of players.
Well,
Right?
Yeah.
Not just Charlie Whitehurst, but it's like...
He's just the first example. That
there's been a lot of backup quarterbacks who've been paid pretty good chunks of money, and who would be probably equally as good on the field as Geno Smith.
Yeah.
Like, I feel pretty good about this situation.
I feel very good about it. All in on Geno Smith. I just hope he never sees the field after the preseason. No, that's not true. He can mop up some games. All right, let's wrap up with the Husky section. Husky baseball made it back on for 1 week. They lost their first two games of the series against Cal before a rainout on Saturday to finish the season 28-24, 12-17 in Pac-12 play. Saturday was set to be senior day for fifth-year senior Joe Wainhouse, who you'll recall from his nice run last year during the NCAA tournament. He hit like 117 this year.
Did he really?
Great. and then also starting outfielder Mason Cirillo from that
he
team.
He hit like 117?
Yeah.
Wasn't he like over 300 last year? Like a pretty good batting
average? Yeah, no, he was. I think it really went south this year.
Ouch. Mason Cirillo was pretty good though, right?
Decent. Neither of them were like the Huskies' best players this year.
Okay.
So they'll be returning. That's the good news.
Their year's over.
Yes.
No tournament play or anything.
Not after they lost both of those games at home.
Okay.
12-17 in conference play. Not good enough to make it to the NCAA baseball tournament.
They would have been on the bubble had they won.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we'll see you in May 2020.
Maybe. Maybe.
We might see you in May 2020, Husky baseball section.
Fingers crossed. UW men's basketball announced that the Huskies will face Tennessee in the Naismith Classic at Scotiabank Arena in Toronto on November 16th. The Vols reached the Sweet 16 last year as one of the country's best teams, but will lose their three leading scorers. Admiral Schofield is a senior, and juniors Jordan Bone and Grant Williams both declared for the NBA draft.
Tennessee was a number one seed?
I think they were a two seed.
A two seed?
Yeah, I think they were in the one seed conversation, but did not get it. They lost...
So this is stiff competition, though. Or is it not because of the players leaving?
It's probably not because of the players leaving. I admit I have not looked closely at the incoming recruiting class that Rick Barnes has here, but I think that these could be two teams that are in relatively similar positions, perhaps. One thing we've learned over the last week is people agree with you more than I expected on UW men's basketball.
I think there were... three people who agreed with me, because even Katie agreed with me.
Yeah. Right? Third Pelton brother Jake One expressed his agreement with you.
I've got Jimmy, I've got Jake One, and I've got Katie on my side. I feel like all of the most hardcore Husky basketball fans, especially like ones who I wasn't sure would agree with me, all did.
Lucas Crowley appears to agree with me. His conclusion was, quote, he didn't say specifically what this was besides saying that Isaiah Stewart is better than Jaden McDaniels. He followed it up with, this has been an upsetting vibe. Which,
for all of us.
Feel you.
I just don't want it to be construed as that I'm like cheering against them. I'm just saying you have to approach every situation with a high level of skepticism. Right?
A high level of skepticism.
This is the one situation where I'm not the optimist, apparently.
Yeah, it's very unusual. It's a weird place to be. Like, I thought I was going to be the pessimist, and then I wasn't.
We've been through this before. I can recognize that this is probably going to be one of the most talented UW teams we've ever seen.
Yes.
As far as recruiting rankings and stuff like that. It's just, I'm a little bit jaded because of highly recruited players coming to UW and the team still missing the NCAA tournament during basically the entire end of the Romar era. And your explanation for that was that they didn't build out depth, which they will have some depth this year.
Depth, experience, which, and defense. Those are the three. If I could turn experience into a D, then it would be good. I would have the three Ds. I don't know what that would be.
So... maybe things will be different. I would love to. And I've been surprised by Mike Hopkins a lot.
Yeah.
We've been surprised by Mike Hopkins 2 years in a row. Although kind of not, actually. I feel like they basically just met expectations this year.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But we were a little bit surprised by him going after Pac-12 play. So we've been surprised by Mike Hopkins' teams 2 years in a row. I've been burned too many times to approach a season optimistically.
Okay. I mean, the pessimist is always either right or pleasantly surprised.
I've been hurt before.
Yeah, you sure have, bud. Do you need that, like a hug? You okay? Can we continue the podcast? The Huskies, we also know their non-conference schedule. They will play Baylor in Anchorage to begin the season in the Diamond Head Classic in Honolulu, and of course continue the home-and-home series against Gonzaga this year at Heckhead.
Baylor and Anchorage, not in Anchorage.
No, in Anchorage. They're playing them in Anchorage.
Who are we playing in Honolulu?
I mean, I have a list of the field. There's a couple of major conference teams in there.
Okay.
I believe like Georgia Tech.
Okay.
I think is in there.
So a pretty solid non-conference schedule. Oh, yeah. Though.
I mean, this is some formidable opposition in terms of Power 5 opponents. Now, the one thing is we don't as yet know of them playing any true road games, because the Baylor and Tennessee games will both be on neutral sites.
Don't play a true road game.
I mean, yes. And also, I mean, obviously Toronto is closer to Tennessee than it is to Seattle, but I feel like spiritually we're much closer to Canada, right?
I think that's going to be a true neutral site.
We played in Canada last year.
More people are going to travel. Just more people are going to travel from Tennessee to go to that game.
I don't know how many people are going to travel from either of those schools.
Probably not. But I'm just saying more people will travel from Tennessee than will travel from Seattle.
Here's what I think, actually. I think Canadians might root for the Huskies.
They might.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Hope so.
If they're just cheering for whoever's the northest, we're always almost going to win, especially over a lot of notable Canadian cities.
We the north are,
yeah.
Toronto.
Take that, Toronto.
Anchorage, though. Clear home court advantage for the Huskies in Anchorage.
Huge. When there's actually a basketball team in Canada, they're going to have to really take back we the north. They're going to be like, we're actually the north. Hashtag actually the north.
that's not going to be a fun fight for anyone. All right, UW softball, as we mentioned earlier, swept Kentucky by scores of 3-0 and 5-0 in the Super Regionals to reach the Women's College World Series. We were there on Friday night for the 3-0 win as Terry Novello got the start and Gabby Plain came in to provide some effective relief as the Huskies capped that shutout. And then Plain went the distance in a shutout on Saturday. Now has not allowed a run in her last 31 2/3 innings, which seems good.
Yeah.
What were your takeaways from our first ever UW softball experience?
It was very cold. that's my primary takeaway.
They need to play these games later in the year in Seattle, apparently.
It was a fluke cold day.
It was. It would have been, if it had been the night before, it would have been
gorgeous. The
temperature
dropped 20 degrees one day to the next.
It's true.
Our seats in the east end zone, I mean, we've looked over at the softball stadium from our seats in the east end zone, the last row of the east end zone. Best seats in the house for Husky football games. Maybe also one of the best seats in the house for Husky softball.
I mean, I don't know if I would go so far as to say the best seats, but they're better than where we were because we were...
excellent seats.
We were standing in like kind of the 200 level, I guess, of Husky Stadium, like near the Don James Center.
Yeah, standing room only... four Husky softball games, which there won't be any more in Seattle, right?
No, they do not host the Women's College World Series, sadly. Although we've been talking about it. They need to rotate it. How come Oklahoma City gets it every year?
Are they in it? Is Oklahoma in it again?
Oh, not only is Oklahoma in
it. Oh, God.
So is Oklahoma State.
What?
Both Oklahoma schools.
Oh, my God.
I mean, next, like, Tulsa's going to make it.
Wait, what is, I'm trying to think of another school that's randomly in the state of Oklahoma, but...
Oklahoma Baptist?
They don't believe in college too much.
I do not endorse that comment.
Look, feelings are involved.
It was at Tristan Garcino.
When you're in standing room only, though, you know,
Oklahoma offered me a scholarship.
Well, good for them.
Did not accept it.
When you're at standing room only for Husky softball, you're fully just in our area, Husky yeah. Stadium. It's like, we know this area well. We have been there.
We should get those tickets, though. We should have first dibs on them.
You should get first dibs for on your football tickets if you're doing standing room only in softball.
It's only relevant to people in one row. We happen to be those people.
Yeah. The scheduling, the whole process would be a nightmare, but it's worth it because it's self-serving for us.
Exactly. That's when will people start to think about what's best for us?
We're paying a lot for those Husky football tickets.
Not that much.
And these, well, really, it's It's not cheap. And the standing room only tickets are $8. They should just give us those tickets. Everybody in the last row should just get free standing room only Husky softball tickets.
I'll see if I can pass that along.
We should own those tickets for any situation when it could be applicable.
What about graduation?
Graduation, we should get it.
I don't want them. I didn't even attend my own graduation.
I didn't either.
Not attending someone else's.
At Kyle's graduation party, we were talking. He was shocked that I didn't attend graduation. I was like, I didn't even know what day it was.
I didn't even graduate with my class because I deferred it in case I decided to come back the following year before I got hired by the Sonics full time.
I didn't even actually graduate from college.
Well... Still got that AA degree. Oh, we've gone far afield here. It was a good time. I suffered through
the cold. I did graduate from college, by the way.
Yeah. I suffered through the cold for the full seven innings. Saw that Husky victory.
You guys took off.
You guys took off from Mono a little bit early.
It's just, I mean, when you balance the being freezing cold outside versus eating a hot chicken sandwich and drinking a frozen drink from Rachel's, it is not a difficult decision to make.
I mean, I still did those things. I didn't not do those things.
But you're standing there and you're like, I could be eating a delicious chicken sandwich right this very second.
Well, I guess I won the marshmallow test this time. All right, let's talk about the Huskies. I don't know if we have any other takeaways for the game. It was a good time. Morgan Flores with a home run, her 22nd of the season in that one.
Another takeaway is that they have a player named Husky.
Yes, that's true. Madison Husky. So there's been a lot of players named Washington who have played for the Huskies. I don't know of any Huskies who have played for the Huskies.
Yeah, that was crucial. I mean, it's similar to Oregon's had a lot of duck related players, right?
They had a mallard, didn't they?
Like Wesley Mallard, was that his name? Yeah,
that sounds right.
I think there was another like sort of duck related.
I'm drawing a blank on that one,
but
it seems like it's an easy recruiting pitch.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the Huskies entering the Women's College
World
Series. All
recruiting pitches are based upon the puns.
Yeah, that's someone's like, why did you get fired as a college coach? I was really too concerned about the puns when I was recruiting than about the talent. The Huskies have allowed just one run through five postseason games and bring a 12-game winning streak to Oklahoma City. Playing this season 23-2 with a 1.14 ERA, while Alvelo is 25-4 with a 1.55 ERA. So the Huskies have that strong 1-2 punch in terms of pitching that you really need, I think, to contend in the Women's College World Series. Flores is 22 home runs, as many home runs as all UW opponents combined, and nearly as many as the rest of her teammates combined. They've got 24, none more than five besides her. She's got a team best 1265 ops. Leadoff hitter Sis Bates is hitting a team high 386 with a 943 ops. She's kind of always on base, it feels like. Mm-hmm. And then senior center fielder Amira Molloy, the daughter of Lawyer, gives them kind of a second leadoff hitter in the number nine spot. She's hitting 306 with an 886 ops. Huskies also have three freshmen starting for them. Sammy Reynolds has an 875 ops, Silent Rain Espinosa 864, and the aforementioned Madison Husky an 824 ops.
Silent Rain Espinosa and Madison Husky is freshmen.
Yeah.
We've got four more years of this. Three more years of this. What year is Daniel Plain?
Yeah, Gabby Plain. Daniel Plain is a combination somehow of Daniel Lord and Gabby. She's a sophomore, so she'll be around
a
while. Alvaro is one of two seniors on the roster.
Two seniors on the roster?
Yeah.
Man.
I mean,
watch out, Oklahomas.
The one thing also, Flores last year, she missed the season. I believe she tore her ACL. And it's kind of a bummer to think, like, hey, what could have happened? Like, they were already in the Women's College World Series final without her. And she's, like, the best hitter on the team by a wide margin.
This year is what could happen. I mean, look how on fire this team is right now.
Yeah, we'll see. So, the Women's College World Series is a refresher for those of you who have not thought about it since last June. A double elimination format.
It's incredibly confusing.
That means you, by the way. Yeah, we're not even going to get into when you reverse brackets, because hopefully the Huskies will win and won't have to worry about that. In 18 tournament, you whittle it down to two finalists with the double elimination format. UW will face number 6 seed Arizona on Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific time in the opener, having swept the Wildcats in Tucson during the regular season. The winner of that faces the winner of number 2 UCLA, who swept the Huskies in the Pac-12 play, and number 7 Minnesota. On the other side of the bracket, you have Oklahoma as the number 1 overall seed.
Oh, God.
The defending champs, Florida State, who beat UW in the finals last year, were the only host team to get upset in the Super Regionals, losing to Oklahoma State.
Out.
They are out.
There we go.
Going to be a new champ this year.
Except.
What do you mean?
It's a team from Oklahoma.
Yes. That's the good news is Florida State's out. The bad news is more teams from Oklahoma. So.
So if you don't understand how the seeding works, there are 8 teams and most of them are from the state of Oklahoma.
I think it's the first. Oklahoma State has not been there very frequently, I'm pretty sure. I mean, you don't usually see a lot of turnover in the Women's College World Series. I would say that there's a lot of teams repeating. Is my assessment of it.
So the Huskies are going into this. Clearly the favorite against Arizona to win their first game.
Yes,
tough game against UCLA, but they're playing very hot right now. What do you feel like? This might be too lofty, but what do you feel like their chances of advancing to the Women's College World Series final are?
I would say probably about 33%.
So a pretty good shot.
Yeah, it's a very real shot.
Do you think that Taryn Alavelo will or should start a game?
Yeah. I mean, you almost always use two starters in this setting.
Really?
I think so.
I remember, with like Danielle Laurie, I remember Danielle Laurie pitching every game.
Yeah, I mean, Laurie was so clearly the best pitcher, but I mean, last year, I feel like Alavelo was struggling much more going into the Women's College World Series, and she still saw plenty of action on the mound.
I mean,
this year it's not been a dramatic difference between the two of them. I would say I feel a lot more confident when Gabby Plain is out there.
Yeah, let's just say that they...
But statistically, they're not that different.
Right now, Gabby Plain is very on fire.
Yes.
But the most important
thing. Alavelo's pitching well in her own right. I mean, they've only given up one run in their last five games against NCAA tournament competition.
Who do you think should start the first game? If we have UCLA circled, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably still Plain because it's so important to win the first game. When Florida State won last year, I believe they became the first team ever to lose their opener and still win the Women's College World Series. Like, you want to stay out of that loser's bracket as long as you can.
Okay.
Well, it'll be exciting to watch.
I mean, I guess you could... the fact that they are willing to bring each of... Are there other pitchers on the team?
I think there is a third pitcher who has seen action this season.
That's wild. How do their arms not hurt at all? It's just the motion doesn't hurt your arm at all?
It's a way more natural motion.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So it could go Plain, Alavelo starting against probably UCLA. And then who would they face after that? Then do they move on? If they were to win both those games, they face Oklahoma after that?
If they win both of those games, they would face a loser from the other side of the bracket, I believe. If I'm remembering that correctly.
I could see them starting Gabby Plain in both these first two games.
Or I guess it wouldn't necessarily be... teams would have to win several games, basically, to get there.
Okay.
There are elimination games on Saturday.
So Thursday is 9 a.m. Pacific.
Thursday is 9 a.m. Pacific. The winners of Thursday's games play on Friday. The losers of Thursday's games play on Saturday in elimination games.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
And it moves fast. So
this is fun. When is it decided who will be playing in the finals? By Sunday?
Sunday. Sunday you determine the finals, and the finals are best of three, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, if necessary.
All right. Where are we going? I remember driving, I swear, to meet you somewhere in Georgetown. Oh, no, I was meeting somebody else in Georgetown last year.
I mean, I normally am not here during the Women's College World Series, at least during the first weekend of it, because I'm normally at the NBA Finals.
I was going to go get tacos at somewhere because we were searching for Seattle's best taco during like game one of the Women's College World Series Finals last year.
I was just flying back from the Bay at that point. So, all right. Well, that's all we have this weekend.
All right.
On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Okay, so you think you can describe Game of Thrones?
I don't know if I think I can describe Game of Thrones. I just want to like...
You want to try?
Yeah, I'm curious to see how accurate it is because I've got like this telephone level understanding of Game of Thrones where I've maybe seen 15 minutes total of the entire...
You've seen 15 minutes total?
It's sometimes on in the background, that sort of thing. But obviously, everyone is talking about it constantly on Twitter and podcasts and things like that. So information filters down to me in a very second or third hand way.
Okay. So what do you think has happened from your never having seen a second of this season?
Yeah, we want to strictly talk about this most recent season.
I mean, I'd be happy for you to tell me the entire series without ever having seen it. I feel like it gets pretty complicated.
I also have like looked at the Wikipedia a little bit, so I might understand a tiny bit of the early part of it.
How do you think this season went without having ever seen a second?
Okay, so... the most notable part of the early episodes, as I understand it, is Arya becoming a woman. Is that fair?
Oh, okay, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose that the
and
most
important part.
And people
being creeped out by that because of the fact that she still seems younger than she is. Is that fair?
Sure, I guess. Yeah. I would say that that's right. Do you have any idea who the man was?
No.
Okay.
Got nothing on that one.
Yeah.
He's not important to that. All that matters is Arya's female empowerment, right?
Yes. Yeah. That's what most of the season was about.
Middle episodes. Yeah, I don't know if I have much from like two or three what happened there.
Okay. That what you're talking about happened, I think, in the third episode.
Oh, really? Is that far along?
Yeah.
I mean, people did talk about that episode one was super boring, right?
Uh-huh. And two and three.
Yeah, they could have just combined those all into like one episode.
No.
Okay, so at some point, so Dany, first off, has lost two of her three dragons. I know a lot about this, right?
Okay.
This is a thing, right?
Well, I mean, yes.
And one of them is named Drogon.
Yes.
Which is a weird name for a dragon. It's like naming your child Homon.
Okay.
Or Person.
Uh-huh.
At some point she like goes evil and kills a bunch of people.
Okay.
And it seems like she's going to take the throne.
Okay.
That's the thing they're trying to do, right?
Yeah, yeah. Everybody's trying to take the throne. Uh-huh.
Everybody's trying to watch the thrones. But then I guess that didn't take.
I guess that didn't take. What do you think happened with her?
She died, right?
Uh-huh. Do you have any idea how?
Oh, Jon Snow killed her, right?
Oh, wow. You really do know all about this season.
I think Rescilla mentioned that. And then the dragon was somehow involved in the death. I don't quite understand that. Like the dragon was there?
The dragon showed up after.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That was Drogon.
Oh, that was Drogon?
Yeah.
Good for Drogon.
Loyal dragon. He scooped her up with his talon and carried her away.
And so then I really don't understand the context of how this happened, but Bran got the throne because did someone else not want it?
No, it was not really offered to him. It was destroyed by the dragon.
Oh, that's what the dragon did. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There, it was really Avenging. Not offered to anybody else.
And Bran is in a wheelchair? Which doesn't really make sense. In that setting, is there supposed to be wheelchairs? Is
well, he modeled it after somebody from like 100 years prior.
Okay.
Because he can see all of time. And what he chose to do with that was look at a wheelchair from 100 years prior.
Okay. So it's kind of like the movie Next then, as it turns out.
Wait, what? The TV show Next by MTV?
No.
Oh.
No, the movie Next was starring Nicolas Cage.
No, I'm not.
Which,
like,
again, I only know about secondhand, thanks to Zach Harper.
He talks about Next a lot?
It came up during the live show in Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah. They showed a clip. That was my first knowledge of it.
I feel like you were like mostly accurate about what happened during the season.
So I still don't understand why or how Bran got the throne. It seemed like people were very upset about this.
There was an impassioned speech by imprisoned Tyrion Lannister.
Okay, so it wasn't that someone else abdicated the throne. It was that Tyrion convinced them to pick Bran.
Yeah, they had a whole, like, basically just every single character who was left alive. They just gathered them all together.
So did not that many people die in the finale?
I would say that less people died in the final season than you anticipated.
Yeah, I mean, you thought that it was kind of going to be a bloodbath. Like this Red Wedding, right? Uh-huh. A lot about this Red Wedding.
Yeah, yeah. People are talking about it.
You can't go anywhere without hearing about the Red Wedding.
I just remember Zach describing the Seahawks offensive line every year as them like having the Red Wedding every off season about the Seahawks offensive line. And I thought that was such a great way to describe it.
Yes.
That was just so unexpected. Like, if you hadn't read the books, you're just like, oh, crap. Major. Because.
Wait, was this alluded to in the books? Because they went past the books. Right?
No, the Red Wedding is what I'm talking about.
Oh, the Red Wedding.
There are so many moments where if you were just a TV show watcher, people dying, you're like, well, I mean, like, this is a TV show. They're not going to kill Ned Stark. And then they cut Ned Stark's head off, and you're like, wow, they really just did that.
Wait, was it surprising that Danny's brother died in the first season?
Not really.
Okay.
He was. See, you know everything about this show. You basically watched it.
I don't need to now.
I think.
Obviously, I would never under any circumstances.
It was clear that she was the star, and Viserys was just like along for the ride. I think it was only a matter of time for him.
So Ned Stark was the one who was like the faint that everyone thought was going to be the big star, but then they just killed him off.
I mean, he's like basically the biggest star of the cast, maybe other than Dinklage going in.
Yeah.
He was in like Lord of the Rings, and it's like a famous character, main character on the TV show. Everybody likes him, 100% approval rating for Ned Stark. And then they just cut his head off, and you're like, "Well, this is a different type of TV show."
Well, most popular guy ever named Ned. They also killed the.
His name's Eddard, but probably also the most popular guy named Eddard too.
They also killed off Aquaman, right?
Yeah, which was less surprising.
Because he wasn't yet Aquaman?
Yeah, because he wasn't yet Aquaman. But that was about sort of like the development of the Daenerys Targaryen story. Like, he needed to die for her to progress.
How many nicknames does Daenerys have?
A lot. She has a lot of titles.
So many nicknames.
I mean, everybody, it's like, you know, like, you have your name, and then you have, like, your, like Stormborn, right?
I don't know what that means.
That confounded you. Yeah. It's just like,
That came up during our game of Salad Bowl on Saturday night.
You're, like, born under a storm or whatever, right? They're like Bran the Broken, the Onion Knight, stuff like that. Like, you need a nickname about who you are.
Do you need it?
Something that like describes not just your name, but who you are as a character. But anyway, so like Robb Stark later on, you're like, that Robb Stark's really got it going. That guy's going to be king. And then dead.
Wow.
Right? And you're like, what in the hell? So that kind of the way that the show set it up where you're like, okay, like we need to expect that characters that we don't think are going to die are going to die. And then this season, it was kind of like, really like sort of the main characters, the characters that people really cared about and emotionally like cheered for, they basically all lived.
Yeah.
So there was a beheading, but I feel like it was a mostly minor character, all things considered. It was a character named Missandei.
Yeah.
That you've heard of.
I have.
You also forgot to mention that they fought a bunch of zombies.
Oh, right. The White Walkers.
Yeah.
And then they died because of the fact that their leader died. And so then all the zombies died.
Yes.
Yeah.
As it happened. Do you know who killed the Night King?
Arya.
Yeah. Well, you Arya know everything about this.
With the jump. Mm-hmm. I mean, Zach Harper was wearing that t-shirt on stage in Chicago. So yeah, that's out there.
He was wearing a t-shirt on stage?
Of the Arya jump.
He was for this?
I guess so. I mean, I didn't ask him. I didn't have a conversation about this.
Clearly, you would have been able to hold a conversation.
I guess I would have.
You really know a lot about the season. Yeah, I feel like that the main story is they're preparing to fight the White Walkers for like three episodes. And then they fight the White Walkers, and then they die, and then they instantly pivot to going and fighting Cersei Lannister in King's Landing. You may have heard of.
Yeah, those words are all familiar to me.
That's the episode with the coffee cup in it.
Yes.
And then, like, all of a sudden they're there fighting King's Landing. And then the next episode, Dany breaks bad, if you will. And
who did she kill when she broke bad? The Lannisters?
Well, she did kill Cersei and Jaime Lannister. Uh-huh. But that was mostly kind of like, not them intentionally. She was just, like, burning down everything with the dragon.
In King's Landing?
Yeah, it was mostly that the reason that she broke bad was not necessarily because she killed them. It was because she was just destroying everything in the city. And they have this idea throughout the show about like being like King of the Ashes or whatever. Like, you don't want to like burn down everything and be King of the Ashes. And that's sort of what she did.
Okay.
So people were really disappointed because it was like she'd like gone crazy or whatever. The whole it just happened so quickly. You're just like, you were good one episode and now you're bad. And then Jon Snow stabbed her like the next episode. We should probably note that there are spoilers.
Yes, we should note that.
But it's like, that's the entire season, right?
I mean, I think when I say I'm going to try to guess the season, like that's, it should be self-evident. If you don't know that there are spoilers, that's on you.
You really knew a lot about this season though. I mean, I guess it.
I don't know if you're aware of this. All of Twitter, every Sunday night was that.
If there was, well, it's like, I don't pay attention to Tiger Woods or whatever. Like I didn't watch any of the Masters. But I was aware that Tiger Woods won the Masters.
Right.
And I had like a pretty general sense of how he won the Masters. He got like a near hole in one at some point. So I guess, and I like listened to podcasts where people were talking about it, even though I didn't care really at all.
I knew the St. Louis Blues are in the Stanley Cup Finals.
I feel like the Stanley Cup Finals, I've somehow like gotten less. I don't know
who's playing against them.
They're playing, I think, against the Bruins.
That seems likely. It's always a team from Boston.
Yeah. Just because it's sports. So, but yeah, I guess I understand. Like, sometimes stuff just comes in. But I'm surprised that you're actually listening to the Game of Thrones content.
Not all of it, but sometimes it's just on and it's easier to just listen to it than change.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay.